for Parsha Ekev, Faith and Torah in Abundance and Scarcity. It should not be surprising that of the six times the Torah obligates us to remember, there's some debate about that number, one is a food memory. A food memory may seem trivial compared to remembering standing at Sinai, remembering the golden calf, or remembering the war with Amalek. But food memories are quite powerful in their own right. When Moshe tells us to forever remember eating manna in the desert, he lands upon the power of food to cement formative experiences and conjure a strong, effective response. What is the power of the food memory of manna supposed to catalyze within us? What was the experience of eating manna in the desert like? And what was it meant to forever enshrine in our religious lives? The Torah's description of eating manna in the desert is a complex interweaving of scarcity and suffering on the one hand, and attentiveness and care on the other hand. Devarim chapter 8, verses 2 to 3, and then 15 to 16 describe the manna as follows. V'zacharta et kol haderech asher holichecha Adonai Elohecha ze arba'im shana b'midbar leman anotcha lenasotcha lada'at et asher b'levavcha hatishmor mitzvotav imlo v'ye'anecha v'yar'ivecha v'ya'achilcha et haman asher lo yadata v'lo yad'un avotecha leman hodiacha ki lo al halechem levado yichye ha'adam. Remember the long way that the Lord your God has made you travel in the wilderness these past 40 years, that God might test you by hardships to learn what was in your hearts, whether you would keep God's commandments or not. God subjected you to the hardship of hunger and gave you manna to eat, which neither you nor your ancestors had ever known, in order to teach you that a person does not live on bread alone, but that a person may live on anything that God decrees. And towards the end of the passage, Hamoli chachaba midbar hagadol v'hanora nachash saraf v'akrav v'tzimaon asher ein mayim hamotzi lecha mayim mitzor chalamish hamachilcha man b'midbar asher lo yadu'un avotecha leman anotcha ulema'an nasotecha lehitivcha ba'acharitecha, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its seraph serpents and scorpions, a parched land with no water in it, who brought forth water for you from the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your ancestors had never known, in order to test you by hardships, only to benefit you in the end. There are two ways to read the three-part sequence that opens this passage. God afflicted you, starved you, and fed you manna. Option one. Manna is presented here as a response to a state of being afflicted. After bringing us to the desert where we were starved and we suffered, Moshe instructs us to remember that God offered respite by providing manna, and we were no longer hungry or afflicted, just as God offered water from a rock. God had to bring us into the desert with all of its hardships in order to escape from slavery, but was ready to do good for us by providing water and food. While there was by necessity some hardship, the primary role of God in the desert is depicted as a provider, responding to hardship and giving us our needs. In the view of one midrash, a rabbinic interpretation of this passage, this picture of manna as a response to daily need in the desert paves the way for a theological approach centered in our awareness of our fragility and dependence, and the opportunity to strengthen our sense of God's loving abundance through daily relationship with God around our needs. I read now from the Mechilta de Rashbi, Parshat Beshalach. So another story of the manna in Parshat Beshalach in Exodus chapter 16. This is around a 3rd century text. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mipnei chibatan shel Yisrael nitan lahem davar yom biyomo. Rabbi Shimon says, out of love of Israel, a day's portion was given on its day. They made a parable. To what is this similar? To a king of flesh and blood who became angry at his son and said, He shall not see my face, except at the beginning of the year he shall come and take his yearly provisions. He would get his provisions each year and wait expectantly. If only I could see my father's face and not be provided for the full year. When he had been appeased, he said, Let him come and take his provisions. The son said, It is adequate if I only get to see the king each day. It is adequate. Kedai, im ein biadi ela ri'yat ha-melech b'chol yom, kedai hu. So Israel, because of their love, provisions were given them each day, so that they would wait expectantly and greet the presence of the Shechina, God's holy presence, each day. Kach Yisrael mipnei chibatan, nitzal lahem parnasat yom yom, kedei sheyeh mechalin u'makbilin pnei Shechina b'chol yom. In Rabbi Shimon's view, manna in the desert is a love story. In the midst of a literal food desert where we had nothing, God and Israel could cultivate a sense of deep relationship as God provided just enough for each day. Awareness of our own needs and dependence was matched by awareness of God, not only as provider in a transactional sense, but as wanting to build a relationship with us through tending to our daily care. This view that idealizes a model of receiving only enough for each day is not only a narrative from the past, but carves out a theological path for the future. In the same passage in the Midrash, Rabbi Eliezer explains why it was forbidden for the people to collect a portion for the next day, why they had to have nothing overnight. On the phrase, a day's portion in its day, Devar Yom Biyomo, in Exodus verse 16, Chapter 16, verse 4, Rabbi Eliezer says the following, that a person should not gather from one day to the next. Shelo yelakit adam mehayom lemachar. And so Rabbi Eliezer says, one who has what to eat today and says, what shall I eat tomorrow? This is one of those who lack faith. As it says, a day's portion on its day. The one who created the day created one's sustenance. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the rhythm of manna deliberately involved being without food overnight so as to cultivate our sense of faith and trust, to know that ultimately our sustenance comes from God. It wasn't only in the first moments of the development of our relationship with God in the desert that we needed to learn this lesson. It is meant to shape our daily experience even now. Rabbi Eliezer critiques the person who devotes their energy to, quote-unquote, gathering manna for the next day, who spends too much time concerned with material needs. We have to know that God's creative power that animates the world day in and day out will also sustain us. At face value, Rabbi Eliezer's approach may sound naive or even irresponsible. Does he really expect people not to tend to their livelihood and live hand to mouth? Does he really think God wants us to live with that level of insecurity? This view has to be paired with Rabbi Eliezer's later comments in the Midrash, where he explains that this state of not being concerned with our physical needs created a particularly conducive context for receiving the Torah. Rabbi Eliezer says, the Torah was only given to expound to those who eat manna. Lo nitna Torah lidrosh ela le'ochlei haman. How so? A person would sit and learn and have no idea from where they would eat and drink, from where they would wear clothes and be covered. Thus, the Torah was given to expound to those who eat manna, and second to them are those who eat truma. In Rabbi Eliezer's approach, the generation who ate manna is best approximated by the priestly class, those who receive food without having to work for it, and are thus able to focus solely on the realm of the sacred. The widespread experience of the generation in the desert becomes a luxury of a privileged minority going forward. In rabbinic tradition, Rabbi Eliezer was a Kohen himself and was wealthy, which may contextualize his approach. Perhaps only someone who never had to worry about having enough food could romanticize the dependency of the desert experience. Rabbi Eliezer's position may be fulfilling exactly what the passage in Parshat Ekev demands, that when we find ourselves in situations of abundance, We make sure not to get carried away with material wealth and the arrogance that can accompany wealth. My own strength and power created this wealth, as we see in this passage, Devarim chapter 8, verse 17. Kochi va'otzem yadi, asali atachayil hazeh. Instead, we can reorient our inner compass through recall of the desert experience when it was so clear that our own wealth is not the ultimate source of providing for our needs. This approach from a standpoint of abundance that frames the insecurity of eating manna as a catalyst for a deeper faith may be a critical and compelling message for some. At the same time, it is difficult to hear of the importance of food insecurity and the importance of minimizing time and attention spent on acquiring a livelihood from the standpoint of lack, where a person may need to spend quite a lot of time and energy to make ends meet. In our own present moment, the experience of food insecurity and lack is becoming more pervasive. Is it really only the priestly class that has access to the meaning of Torah? Could the heirs of the desert experience, those who were so close to God and Torah, include the many or even most of us who don't have the luxury of neglecting the work of our daily needs? There is an altogether different picture of the experience of eating manna and its theological significance that I want to explore next. Manna as a form of affliction. The act of eating manna itself could be enumerated in Parshat Akev, chapter 8, verse 2, as part of the experience of affliction. The three initial verbs, God afflicted you, starved you, and fed you manna, could be synonyms rather than a narrative sequence, all giving shape to the experience of hardship in the desert. In this telling, manna was part of the experience of hardship rather than their response. The end of the passage in verse 16 lends itself to this reading as well. Who fed you manna in the desert in order to afflict you? How could the experience of food magically appearing each day be a source of hardship? Two sages in the Talmud expand upon this idea of manna as a source of suffering rather than satisfaction, and I will relate to the first of those statements. This is in Yoma 75b. Hama'achilcha man bamidbar leman anotcha, indum ami sheyesh lo pat besalo, lemin she'ein lo pat besalo. Who fed you manna in the desert in order to afflict you? One who has bread in their basket is not similar to one who has no bread in their basket. This statement draws us into the psychology of food insecurity inherent in eating manna. When one has no additional food in their bread basket, when the shelves are not stocked, eating a meal is synonymous with profound loss. With each bite, instead of feeling more satisfied, one becomes profoundly more aware of their shrinking food supply. It is an act of consumption in its full sense, eating, that simultaneously depletes. The anxiety that accompanies each bite leaves no room to enjoy the food. The rhythm of eating manna, only getting enough food for one day, involved an intensity of uncertainty that made it no normal eating experience. The charge to remember eating manna is a demand to relive the profound trauma of food insecurity that the desert experience involved. Why did God put us in that state? The passage in Devarim in this week's Parsha provides two answers, one more abstract and one more concrete. Abstractly, the purpose for the scarcity and affliction in the desert was to teach us that the ultimate source of our sustenance is God. We can be sustained by anything God dictates. The concrete application of this memory of food scarcity is to ensure that we won't forget God in the future, even when we may not need God, so to speak, if we live in a state of abundance. The difficult memory of manna is a sort of antidote to the sense of self-reliance and arrogance that can emerge from abundance, but it is a dark and foreboding memory. The love story of Rabbi Shimon's Midrash reads more like a horror story in this telling. God deprived Israel of food in the desert to amplify a sense of anxiety regarding themselves and their entire families that would require Israel to turn to God out of desperation and beg for food. Passage in the Talmud, Yoma 86a, describes this sort of stance. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's students asked him, why didn't the manna fall once a year for Israel instead of each day? He responded, I will relate a parable to you to what is this similar to a king of flesh and blood who had a son. Once he allotted his sustenance yearly, and he didn't greet his father except for that one time in the year. He went and allotted his sustenance daily, and he greeted his father every day. So too Israel. Someone who had four or five children would be anxious and say, maybe the manna won't fall tomorrow, and they will all die of famine. It ended up that they all directed their hearts to their Father in heaven. This dark side of our daily bread, when read in its extreme, paints a picture of God as manipulative or even abusive. The only way God could get us to be in relationship was to starve us. Rabbi Yehoshua cannot countenance this interpretation of the manna story. In contrast to Rabbi Eliezer's idealization of one who doesn't worry about the next day's meal, Rabbi Yeshua cannot imagine that God wanted us to be in a state of dramatic food insecurity. Rabbi Yehoshua, in rabbinic tradition, was himself poor, and he offers the following reading of the manna story. This is from the same rabbinic passage above, Mechilta de Rashbi, B'Shalach, chapter 16. Rabbi Yeshua says, God provided a portion each day so that a person should gather from one day to the next, just like from Shabbat Eve for Shabbat. In what seems to be a radical departure from the plain meaning of the story of manna in Exodus chapter 16, Rabbi Yehoshua suggests that the portion of manna people gathered each day was actually for the next day, just like on the eve of the Sabbath. On Friday, they collected two portions for Shabbat and for Sunday, while the rest of the week they collected only one portion, enough for the following day. This seems to fly in the face of the biblical story that describes the manna going rotten if it was left overnight. As we see in Exodus chapter 16, verses 19 to 20. Midrash scholars have struggled to explain Rabbi Yeshua's position here. Maybe it couldn't be left over if it had already been prepared, but it was meant to be left over in its raw form. It's confusing. But rather than a reason to dismiss this position because of the textual difficulty, actually makes this view all the more intriguing. Rabbi Yehoshua, who was himself poor, according to rabbinic tradition, cannot imagine a God who would leave his people without food for the next day. Our daily bread, as the mode for relationship with God, results in a naive and irresponsible approach to the human need to pursue a livelihood, and it presents a major theological problem. How could God intentionally put us in a state of such anxiety? To the contrary, says Rabbi Yehoshua, the people of Israel was being trained to know that they would always go to sleep with the security of the next day's meal in their basket, so to speak. They were being trained to make sure to pursue a livelihood and not live recklessly and in fear, waiting to get their daily bread each morning. This stance paves the way for an approach to the pursuit of a livelihood entirely opposite to Rabbi Eliezer, going back to the Mechilta text. Rabbi Yeshua says, if a person learns two halachot in the morning and two halachot in the evening and worked all day, it is considered like fulfilling the entire Torah. Unlike Rabbi Eliezer, who scoffs at a person who spends too much time thinking even about the next day's meal, Rabbi Yehoshua believes in a religious orientation that is rooted in spending most of the day tending to our material needs. One doesn't need to be the Kohen who has meals provided for them in order to receive and expound upon Torah. We may need to spend most of our days tending to our daily bread. And when we frame that day's work with the slow and steady drip of Torah, this too is a path of fulfillment. The Talmud shares two other reasons for why God offered us a daily portion of manna instead of enough for a year. Another explanation, so they would eat it when it was hot. Another explanation, because of the burden for the way. It would have been too heavy to carry enough food for a year. In these readings, getting only enough manna for each day did not add to our experience of affliction, nor was it embedded in a complex theological encounter. It was simply considerate, a way to tend to our needs in the most loving and practical manner. The memory of manna is at once a means to relive and thereby confront the intensity of food insecurity, a reality that is skyrocketing nationally and globally in our present moment, and also a means to relive and embrace divine love that is rooted in tending to real and practical daily needs. Wherever we each may be on the axes sketched out in retelling the desert story, in a state of relative lack or abundance, finding Rabbi Eliezer's or Rabbi Yehoshua's approach more resonant, may the manna's interweaving of food, faith, and relationship teach us to notice real need in ourselves and others, and tend to the work of sustenance with diligence and care. How we feed ourselves and each other is nothing less than bringing divine words to life.